From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, President Obama highlighting Ukraine in a speech backing freedom seekers. Tiananmen Square's 25th anniversary, Africa's Ebola outbreak, plus planets discovered nearly as old as the universe. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Obama continues his Europe tour and is now in Brussels. On Wednesday, while in Poland, Mr. Obama held up 25 years of Polish democracy as a beacon of hope, not only for the people of Europe, but peoples everywhere. He spoke during a Freedom Day celebration in Warsaw.
In that age-old contest of ideas between freedom and authoritarianism, between liberty and oppression, between solidarity and intolerance, Poland's progress shows the enduring strength of the ideals that we cherish as a free people. Here we see the strength of democracy, citizens raising their voices free from fear. Here we see political parties competing in open and honest elections. Here we see independent judiciary working to uphold the rule of law. Here in Poland, we see a vibrant press and a growing civil society that holds leaders accountable because governments exist to lift up their people, not to hold them down. Here we see the strength of free markets and the results of hard reforms. Gleaming skyscrapers soaring above this city and superhighways across this country. High-tech hubs and living standards that previous generations of Poles could only imagine. This is the new Poland you have built. An economic miracle on Wisła. Sud nas Wisła. Here we see the strength of free nations that stand united. And across those centuries of struggle, Poland's fate too often was dictated by others. This land was invaded and conquered, and carved up and occupied, but those days are over. Poland understands, as few other nations do, that every nation must be free to chart its own course, to forge its own partnerships, to choose its own allies. This year marks the 15th anniversary of Poland's membership in NATO. And we honor Polish service in the Balkans, in Iraq, and Afghanistan. And as Americans, we are proud to call Poland one of our strongest and closest allies. So this is the Poland we celebrate today. The free and democratic Poland that your forebears and some who are here today dreamed of and fought for and in some cases died for. The growing and secure Poland that you, particularly the young people who are here today, have enjoyed for your entire lives. It is a wonderful story, but the story of this nation reminds us that freedom is not guaranteed, and history cautions us to never take progress for granted. On the same day, 25 years ago, that Poles were voting here, tanks were crushing peaceful democracy protests in Tiananmen Square, on the other side of the world. The blessings of liberty must be earned and renewed by every generation, including our own. And this is the work to which we rededicate ourselves today. Our democracies must be defined not by what or who we're against, but by a politics of inclusion and tolerance that welcomes all our citizens. Our economies must deliver a broader prosperity that creates more opportunity across Europe and across the world, especially for young people. Leaders must uphold the public trust and stand against corruption, not steal from the pockets of their own people. Our societies must embrace a greater justice that recognizes the inherent dignity of every human being And as we've been reminded by Russia's aggression in Ukraine, our free nations cannot be complacent in pursuit of the vision we share, a Europe that is whole and free and at peace. We have to work for that. We have to stand with those who seek freedom.
President Obama speaking Wednesday at Poland's Freedom Day event in Warsaw. Freedom Day remembers Poland's first democratic parliamentary election since the end of World War II that happened back in 1989. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says Russia's annexation of Crimea and its involvement in eastern Ukraine are the biggest threat to European security since the end of the Cold War, and he called on NATO allies to respond. VOA's Al Pessin is in London and has our report.
Russian-backed militias continue to fight government forces in eastern Ukraine, challenging the country's new government and, according to Secretary Hagel, creating a challenge for the transatlantic alliance.
We must continue to uphold the credibility of this alliance and the credibility of the international order that European security has anchored for seven decades.
Speaking after a NATO defense minister's meeting in Brussels, Hagel said the need for a new security posture will require European allies to spend more, and they should act before the alliance summit in September.
And members should arrive at the summit already taking steps in the right direction.
The NATO meeting also dealt with the changing allied role in Afghanistan. The combat role will end this year, and the alliance is putting together a force to work with U.S. troops to continue supporting Afghan forces and fighting terrorism. But it's not so easy for European countries to agree on defense issues, according to Raoul Ruparel of the Open Europe Research Organization.
The Ukraine crisis has once again highlighted the divisions within Europe, particularly on foreign policy and particularly on any form of intervention in other countries.
That has been NATO's challenge since the fall of the Soviet Union more than 20 years ago. And it's something alliance leaders continue to grapple with after 10 years in Afghanistan, with new and unexpected threats continuing to emerge. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
China is a fascinating country
with interesting people doing amazing things.
Every Friday, we focus attention on some of our favorite things coming out of China during the previous week.
It may be political, it may be cultural.
It may simply be a curiosity that caught our attention.
But we'll find stories sure to be of interest.
And then, of course, we'll add our own American perspectives as well.
I'm Sarah Williams.
I'm Jim Stevenson.
Join us for China Focus every Friday at 12 hours Universal Time on VOA Radio.
And anytime on the web at voanews.com and on Facebook VOA Asia.
As President Obama mentioned earlier, 25 years ago Wednesday, China experienced the violent Tiananmen Square crackdown on democracy activists believed to have left hundreds dead. VOA's Victor Beatty reports on U.S. response to the anniversary.
U.S. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf called on Beijing to release all those detained ahead of the June 4th anniversary and allow for greater freedom of speech and expression in China.
This is something we've been very clear about. China is a growing country. We've talked a lot about the fact that this is not a zero-sum game here. And as they grow, I think it's time to allow some more space, quite frankly, for discussion in their own country, particularly around this kind of anniversary.
Blind dissident Chen Guangcheng, a self-taught lawyer who escaped house arrest in 2012 and was allowed to emigrate to the United States from the U.S. Embassy in Beijing, told the American Enterprise Institute in Washington Tuesday that while there is great economic progress in China, there has been very little political reform. He says people are still afraid to speak out about the June 1989 massacre. Speaking in English publicly for the first time, Chun said a government that cannot face its own history is a government without a future. He praised the opening of a museum in Hong Kong dedicated to remembering the Tiananmen Square crackdown. He says it is part of a global narrative that reminds the Chinese government the anniversary has not been forgotten.
Every candlelight vigil makes the perpetrators shudder in fear. It gives people courage to think and speak aloud again.
Chun thanked those who, in his words, refused to bury history and pursue the truth about what happened 25 years ago.
Many Chinese people are beginning to awake. They were overcoming their fear. and working for democracy, Chinese will change. But we must stop the Communist Party from brutalizing and suppressing the China people during this inevitable change.
He called on the outside world to look beyond China's economic success and help end internet censorship and, in his words, break down the Great Firewall of China. Jared Genser, a human rights lawyer with the Freedom Now organization, says even though one-third of Chinese today were born after 1989, the proliferation of mobile phones and efforts to break down that firewall have made people more aware of what happened. He anticipates justice will eventually be done.
Not necessarily justice in terms of holding individual perpetrators to account, but ultimately, you know, I think that any authoritarian government ultimately is going to come to a point in its existence where the population is going to demand accountability for past wrongs to start to heal the wounds of the past.
Genser acknowledges that with China's rise, it becomes more immune to outside pressure to improve its human rights record. However, he says he remains optimistic because the Chinese people are speaking out with an estimated 120,000 protests over economic issues annually. He says the government is losing the information war and is being pressured to become more responsive to public demands. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Key U.S. lawmakers are dissatisfied with the Obama administration's initial efforts to explain the prisoner swap that freed U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl from 5 years of Taliban captivity. VOA's Michael Bowman reports.
One day after White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough met privately with Senate Democrats, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper fielded senators' questions at a closed-door committee hearing Wednesday. Clapper did not speak with reporters afterwards, but Republican Senator Lindsey Graham emerged dissatisfied. Graham said he remained skeptical of the Obama administration's assertion that Bergdahl's declining health made the prisoner exchange an urgent matter that justified the release of five Taliban militants from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
I asked questions about life-threatening illnesses. No one could say that this man, Sergeant Bergdahl, was in a life-threatening situation near death. I also asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of likelihood would exist for these guys going back to the fight after the year? And let's put it this way, the answer was very disturbing, likelihood being great.
Graham said the controversy merits thorough public hearings similar to congressional probes of the 2003 abuse scandal at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. The chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Democrat Dianne Feinstein, declined to comment after the Clapper encounter, but is on record criticizing the Obama administration's failure to notify lawmakers ahead of the prisoner swap. Bergdahl is widely reported to have wandered away from his post prior to being taken by the Taliban. Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid said all U.S. service members deserve to be freed from enemy hands, regardless of the circumstances of their capture.
There are questions regarding Sergeant Bergdahl's disappearance and whether or not military code was violated. These are issues that will be resolved by the United States Army, not Monday morning quarterbacks on Capitol Hill. And whatever the results of the military's inquiries, it doesn't change the fact that one more American soldier is home safe. What was the alternative?
Earlier in the day, U.S. Army Chief Raymond Odierno promised a thorough, transparent, and complete review of the circumstances surrounding Bergdahl's capture. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Also in the news, Bashar al-Assad has won a landslide victory in the Syrian presidential election, securing a third 7-year term while fighting a bloody civil war against rebels seeking his ouster. Syria's parliament speaker said more than 10 million people voted for Mr. Assad in Tuesday's election, giving him almost 89% of the vote. The voter turnout was 73% nationwide. This election was held in government-controlled areas only. Saud government has sought to present this vote as a democratic solution to Syria's 3-year conflict. And even as Damascus erupted in celebration on Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry pledged $290 million in humanitarian assistance to boost UN efforts in Syria and neighboring countries hosting refugees from Syria. Speaking at a news briefing in Beirut, Mr. Kerry said there is still an enormous need that's not being met, adding that all nations have a responsibility to try and end the conflict in Syria.
I particularly call on those nations directly supporting the Assad regime in what has become a grotesque display of modern warfare by a state against its own people. I call on them, Iran, Russia, and I call on Hezbollah, based right here in Lebanon, to engage in a legitimate effort to bring this war to an end.
Secretary Kerry also called on donor nations to continue to deliver on their pledges of support. United Nations Refugee Agency said Lebanon is now hosting more than 1 million Syrian refugees who have fled their country's three-year-old crisis.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its
military. You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
civilians. And sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
All that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
The UN humanitarian chief warned Wednesday that Somalia is at a risk of severe food crisis and that 50,000 children under the age of five could die from severe malnutrition if funding is not received quickly. VOA's Margaret Bashir reporting now from the UN in New York.
Valerie Amos told UN Security Council members that peace and stability gains made over the past 2 years could be in jeopardy if Somalia has to cope with a food crisis similar to the famine of 2011.
Approximately 857,000 people in Somalia require urgent and life-saving assistance. An additional 2 million people are on the margin of food insecurity and require continued livelihood support.
She noted that more than 1 million Somalis are displaced within their country and another million have sought refuge in neighboring countries. Amos said political and security gains have not led to an improvement in the humanitarian situation. Late rains and unpredictable weather are also complicating matters and could bring a below-average harvest in July and August.
The situation is further compounded by the ongoing military offensive and the new Al-Shabaab tactic of blocking major supply routes and encirclement of newly recovered areas.
She said the extremist group's tactic of surrounding those recovered areas has prevented commercial activity and the ability to get humanitarian aid to those regions. Amos said funding to humanitarian programs is down sharply, forcing the humanitarian community to cut back on all but the most basic of interventions. She said UNICEF has warned that 50,000 children under the age of five could die from severe malnutrition if funding is not received. Of the $933 million the UN has asked of donors for this year, less than 20% has been funded. Amos said the UN needs an immediate injection of $60 million for the next 3 months to address urgent food, nutrition, and health care needs. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Doctors Without Borders says the ongoing Ebola outbreak is resurging in Guinea and neighboring Sierra Leone. VOA's Anne Look has more from Dakar.
Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, says it has seen more than 20 new cases of Ebola at its treatment centers in Guinea since last week alone. The total number of suspected new cases is believed to be higher. MSF says areas like the capital, Conakry, and the towns of Gwekweju in Macenta, near the border with Liberia, have seen a spike in the number of new patients. But Ebola is also cropping up in previously untouched towns, like Telemele, just north of the capital, and the coastal town of Bofa. MSF Director of Operations Bart Janssens says this geographical spread is a problem.
It clearly indicates that the epidemic is not at all under control, as we might have hoped sort of 1 or 2 weeks ago when we really saw cases continually going down over time.
He says people should seek treatment as soon as they show symptoms or if they believe they have been exposed. The Ebola virus is spread through direct contact with the bodily fluids of an infected person, and the virus can be transmitted even after that person dies. Health workers say families moving bodies for funerals have been a factor in the spread of the disease. It can take up to 3 weeks for symptoms to appear. The symptoms include fever, vomiting, body aches, and uncontrollable bleeding. There is no cure. Health workers try to isolate suspected cases. MSF's Janssen says some people do recover with medical care.
People are afraid to come out and that it's difficult to identify all cases and also to track the contacts of these cases. These people travel through other sites, either because they do not know they're sick or either because they want to get away from places where they can be identified.
The ongoing outbreak in West Africa has had about a 70% fatality rate. Those who have survived, as well as relatives of those who have died, report being stigmatized by their communities. The outbreak spread into border areas of Liberia and Sierra Leone in April. Liberia has not reported any new cases in a month. That is not the case for Sierra Leone. MSF says it is setting up a new clinic there in the town of Kwandu, near the border with Guinea. One person confirmed to have Ebola and three others suspected of having the disease died in Kwandu this week. Sierra Leone's health ministry had reported 18 possible new cases there at the end of May. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
An international team of scientists reports the discovery of two new planets orbiting a star nearly as old as the universe. VOA's Roseanne Skirbel reports one of those planets could have the conditions to support life.
Astronomers focused on Captain's star. It's the second fastest moving star in the sky and among the brightest and closest, just 13 light years away. That makes it an ideal candidate for study, says team leader Gilliam Anglada with Queen Mary University of London's School of Physics and Astronomy.
We can get higher precision on the measurements, and also because it's low mass star, we can detect smaller planets and lower mass planets.
The astronomers recorded periodic changes in the motion of the star using spectrometers to calculate shifts in the star's light.
And this tells us that there's a planet around them.
Writing in the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, Anglada describes two new planets. One circles Captain's star in 48 days, the other in 120.
And the one that goes around the star every 48 days, this is at the right distance from the star to allow liquid water on its surface. So this is why we say this is potentially habitable.
The planet, dubbed Captain B, is about five times the size of Earth. The second planet, Captain C, is a more massive super-Earth that astronomers think is too cold to support liquid water. While the findings confirm the growing evidence that planets surround every star, Anglada says what sets Captain's star apart is its age.
It formed only 1 billion years after the universe was born. The universe has 13 billion years around that. This means that the elements to form planets that could support liquid water were present very, very early in the story of the universe.
Anglada says life would have had a very long time to evolve, making Captain B the oldest potentially habitable planet discovered to date. The next step, he says, is to probe its atmosphere to find out whether it has water. Scientists are developing instruments to do that. While we're waiting for answers, you can see Captain's star in the sky over the southern hemisphere with a pair of binoculars. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
And the remaining tickets to the most important World Cup matches were sold out quickly on Wednesday, disappointing lots of fans who waited in lines across Brazil. Tickets for the June 12th opener between Brazil and Croatia in Sao Paulo were sold out in about an hour, as were all of those for the July 13th final match. About 180,000 extra tickets were made available by FIFA for all the 64 matches of the month-long tournament that begins next week. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in today to the Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. A reminder, you can find us on the Internet anytime at voanews.com. And we hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Thursday.
This is Today in History. On June 5th, 1851, author Harriet Beecher Stowe's internationally known anti-slavery novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, first began to appear in serial form in the weekly publication National Era. On this day in 1883, British economist John Maynard Keynes was born. His general theory of employment, interest, and money sought to address the problems of the Great Depression by encouraging the use of public spending or tax cutting as a remedy for underemployment and as a spur to consumer spending. Keynesian economics was a dominant economic policy for the 30 years after the Second World War. In 1947, U.S. Secretary of State George Marshall outlined a program of economic assistance to war-ravaged Europe. In a speech at Harvard University, he proposed what became known as the Marshall Plan. By 1953, the United States had spent $13 billion in economic aid and technical assistance in 16 countries. In 1967, Israel launched a preemptive attack that destroyed most of Egypt's air force. Israeli ground forces moved into the Sinai Peninsula and the Gaza Strip in what is known as the Six-Day Mideast War. On this day in 1968, New York Senator Robert F. Kennedy, running for president, was mortally wounded by Palestinian-American gunman Sirhan Sirhan in Los Angeles, California. Bobby Kennedy, as he was known, had just won the California primary election. He died the next day. In 1981, the Centers for Disease Control published the first report about a disease that would later become known as AIDS. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The May 25th election in Ukraine of President-elect Petro Poroshenko reaffirms Ukraine's commitment to the democratic process. The United States, said U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations Rosemary DiCarlo, is heartened by President-elect Poroshenko's stated goal to make national reconciliation a priority. In this regard, the United States welcomes the Ukrainian government's intention to continue the National Unity Roundtables, which have allowed Ukrainians from all regions to come together to discuss their differing political views. The United States welcomes the Ukrainian Parliament's recent Memorandum of Understanding and Peace that calls on all citizens to abandon radical actions and to protect, promote, and build a democratic, sovereign, and united Ukraine. The United States is also encouraged by President-elect Poroshenko's willingness to seek greater decentralization for the regions, to pursue constitutional reforms following the election, and to engage in dialogue with Russia. The United States urges Russia to keep its commitment to recognize the results of the election and begin to engage with President-elect Poroshenko to resolve the crisis. Despite progress made with the election, the U.S. is deeply concerned by the increased violence in Donetsk and Luhansk, including ongoing reports that separatists continue to carry out criminal actions in parts of eastern Ukraine. The United States recognizes that Ukraine must uphold law and order on Ukrainian territory and calls on the separatists to disarm and end the violence. Russia can and must act to stem such provocative actions. The United States remains committed to working with Ukraine and other partners to seek de-escalation and the peaceful resolution of the conflict, and to respect the territorial integrity of Ukraine. The United States continues to support the aspirations of the Ukrainian people for a prosperous, sovereign, independent, and united Ukraine, including the Crimea region, with strong ties to both East and West.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.